ultimate evil back in 1979 had a name for most Americans, Ayatollah Khomeini, the leader of Iran who declared America the Great Satan and watched as students overran the U.S. Embassy in Tehran and took 52 Americans hostage.
Good evening. The U.S. Embassy in Tehran has been invaded and occupied by Iranian students. The Americans inside have been taken prisoner.
There seemed no way for a superpower to confront this implacable enemy. Extracting the hostages was impossible. A U.S. military mission to rescue them was a fiasco. All seemed lost. That's the actual narrative of the hostage crisis that changed America's identity in the world and in part derailed the presidency of Jimmy Carter. But behind the scenes in Tehran, there were other forces at work.
You got six people hiding out in a town of what? 4 million people, all of whom chant death to America all the livelong day. You want to set up a movie in a week. You want to lie to Hollywood, a town where everybody lies for a living. And you're going to walk the Brady Bunch out of the most watched city in the world. Look, I got to tell you, we did suicide missions in the Army that had better odds than this.
That clip is from the new Ben Affleck movie Argo, which is based on a true story. In 2007, Wired magazine helped break the story of how six other Americans caught in the chaos of Tehran managed to hide out and then get rescued by the CIA. Joshua Behrman is the journalist who wrote that article, How the CIA Used a Fake Sci-Fi Flick to Rescue Americans from Tehran. He joined us from KPCC in Los Angeles to explain how the 444-day Tehran hostage saga could generate the high-speed action of Argo.
The embassy takeover sort of unfolded over time, and some of the American embassy workers who were in the consulate, as the students were taking over the compound, managed to escape. And so they were suddenly on the lam in Tehran, which was already sort of a hostile city and becoming more so because of the hostage crisis.
And they did what any Americans would do who wanted to be safe from reality. They go to Canada.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they sort of hopped around a little bit and realized that it wasn't safe at their actual residences. And ultimately, six Americans found their way to the Canadian ambassador's residence.
Now, it was known that there were these six other folks, but what was not known was the outlandish plan to get them out of the country. I mean, these are like superheroes of BS and absolute balls who managed to make this happen.
Tony Mendez, who is the CIA agent who was the subject of my article and also is the main character in the film, was known as in the CIA as the master of disguise. And he had worked with all these sort of disguise and illusion effects and whatnot to get people out of tight situations before. So he was quite experienced at stuff like this. And after some time, when it was clear the administration knew, and the Canadian government obviously knew that these people were hiding out, but nobody else really knew, public didn't know. But it was just a matter of time until somebody would figure it out, either the Iranians or the press or somebody. And so then there would be this manhunt on the loose. So the clock was ticking. And so eventually in early January, Tony came on the scene and came up with this daring and kind of wacky scheme to pretend that he was a producer, an Irish producer, and that the six Americans were Canadian, part of the production crew, the director, the screenwriter, script supervisor, stuff like that, and that they were there in Tehran on a location scout, and then they would all just leave through the airport under this false pretense, the airport being the most dangerous place in Tehran, potentially, because they're looking for people that are trying to sneak out of the country. So he, in order to create that cover story, he actually went to Hollywood, created a fake production company with the assistance of a longtime sort of CIA asset in the movie business, a guy named John Chambers, who was a makeup effects guy. And they created all the trappings of this film project so that they could believe in it if forced to, you know, under duress or questioning.
What did they have to do, actually, in Tehran to make themselves believable that really put them at risk?
Tony got there. He had all these documents and all these things, the passports, Canadian passports for the Americans, which were real fakes, he called them. So they were real Canadian documents, not forged, but issued under these false names. And actually, to do that, the Canadian government had to meet in secret in this special session of Parliament for the first time since the war and sort of violate its own laws to create these documents. And then he came along with all the kinds of things that he had put together in Hollywood for this production. So he had a script that John Chambers had sort of laying around from a previous project that had died, that was kind of fitting because it was this mystical sci-fi adventure in the desert. This was after Star Wars. And he had some storyboards, and he had this concept art that actually existed for this project that had died, which was based on this sci-fi book called Lords of Light that Jack Kirby, who's a famous comic book artist, known for creating half of the comic book heroes that we know, he had done all this art. Tony had that stuff with him. And so they had all these things with them in case they had to undergo questioning of any kind or, you know, prove themselves in some way.
And did, in the end, this story work? I mean, specifically, did they, we're done with the movie, let's go to the airport. Was it simple as that?
Yeah, I mean, essentially. So what happened was, you know, Tony got there and went to the Canadian residence, hooked up with the would-be hostages, the house guests, as they were sort of ironically called, indoctrinated them in their cover and their story, and then they just, you know, went to the airport and managed to get out without much incident. Nobody really figured it out until later.
What does it say about the identity of the United States at that time and the character of the Iranians at that time, that this would be the scenario and that the Iranians, of course, would buy a Hollywood film crew or an Irish film crew making a sci-fi movie in the middle of Tehran?
Well, I think then as now, everybody does love Hollywood. You know, it sort of transcends all kind of political divisions. And interestingly, even though Tehran is in chaos and there's this revolution, which is sort of different factions are consolidating power and whatnot, the country needed hard currency. Assets had been frozen. So the business-oriented ministries were trying to get people to come actually to Iran, even at this time. You know, it was of interest to me, of course, in doing the story that the whole process sort of suggested this symmetry between statecraft and stagecraft and the theatrics of it all and how sort of Washington and Hollywood sometimes are in the same business of projecting illusions. And so the story is kind of, you know, trading on that to some extent.
Before we go, Joshua, I guess many lessons from the hostage crisis. But the lessons from Argo is if Hollywood won't buy your film, pitch it to the CIA. And if they don't buy it, pitch it to Tehran. Right,
and then pitch it to Wired, and then have George Clooney buy it.
Joshua Behrman, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Joshua Behrman wrote the 2007 Wired article "How the CIA Used a Fake Sci-Fi Flick to Rescue Americans from Tehran." The article is the basis for the new film Argo, which hits theaters this Friday.